We are on chapter 7 tonight of the book of Esther, and we're at the second party now. What happened? Esther went to the king. The king said, "What can I do for you? Come to my party." Comes to the party. The king says, "What can I do for you?" She says, "Come to my party tomorrow." "Oh yeah, I want Haman to come too." And he comes home. He sees that Mordechai is refusing to bow down to him. He prepares gallows for him at the advice of his family. He goes to the king to say, "I got to get rid of this guy." And the king, in the meantime, has had a dream or has been unable to sleep. And he has read before him the books where it says that Mordechai saved his life. And he says, "What has been done for him?" "Absolutely nothing." He says, Right then, Haman comes in, and he says, "What should be done for the one that the king wants to honor?" Haman, thinking that it is he who is to be honored, says, "Let him go on the king's horse, wear the king's clothes, maybe even the king's crown," different explanations we said last week, "and let it be called out before him, this is what is done for the man that the king wants to honor." King says, "You got it. Go ahead and take Mordechai, parade him through the city." He comes back home, and his family says, "Oh man, you're a goner. If you're starting to fall, that's the end of you. No more hope for you." In the meantime, he's called to go to the king's party, to Esther's party. So we begin chapter 7. "Vayavoh hamelech v'haman lishtos im Esther hamakah." The king and Haman come to drink with Esther the queen. But there's no food here. Now, we said before that it's called a mishta, a drinking party, even though it's always translated as a banquet because they have lots to drink there. The Malbim, as we pointed out last week, said that the fact that he doesn't fall asleep after having been at one drinking party was in itself miraculous, and that's part of the whole story. Now, so the king says to Esther, also the second day at the wine party, "What is your question, Queen Esther, if you not in love? And it will be given to you. What is your desire? Up to half of the kingdom it shall be done." Esther says, "If I have found favor in your eyes, O king, give me my life for my request, me and my people, as my desire." Now, I'm fudging on the translation of the words here. There are the two words. There is she'ela and bakasha, the two words for the request over here. And we mentioned about these two words, what do they mean, and we'll see again today. And she says, "I'm asking you this, kinim karnu ani v'ami, because I and my people have been sold, what, la'ashmid, to destroy, la'arog, to be killed, la'abed, to wipe out," is your translation wipe out?
Destroyed.
So then what do you have for the first one? The three words.
Exterminated, killed, destroyed.
Okay. Exterminated, killed, and destroyed. The Elu, and if only karnu, if we were to have been sold for men and women, slaves or servants?
Slaves.
Okay.
Slaves and
maid servants. Okay, so that the avadim is for the male and shvachot is for the female. Hecharashti, I would have been
silent.
I wouldn't have said anything. Why? And now I don't know how to translate the end of the sentence based on the first part. Ki ein hatzor shoveh b'nezek kamela. How do you have the translation?
The suffering would then not be equal to the king's loss.
The suffering what?
Would then not be equal to the king's loss.
What do you have? You have the same?
For the adversary is not worthy of the king's damage.
Okay. Now, the difference between those two, we'll just keep those in mind. We'll come back. There's a big difference between those two translations. So now, sentence 8, Vayomer HaMelech Ahasuerus, King Ahasuerus says, Vayomer LeEsther HaMalkah, and he says to Queen Esther, Mi hu zeh? Who is this? Ve'ezahu? And who is it? Hashem lo'oli bola aso kein, whose heart was filled. It's not his heart was filled, it's a verb. Not passive.
There?
Yes. In other words, Melo'ol, the way I said his heart was filled is passive, but it's not passive. It's Melo'ol, though, who filled his heart. Lasso came to do this. But Omer Esther, and Esther says, Ish, a person, Tsar ve'oyev. Two terms over here for...
A hateful man and an enemy.
Haman... Hara Hazeb, this evil Haman. So Haman, Nivas, and Haman is?
Embarrassed.
Huh?
Shrank before the king.
He is shrank and embarrassed. Is that your translation?
Yeah, I am bad translation.
Okay, what does it say this?
Oh, you want that too, huh?
Trembles in terror before the king.
Okay. So one is shrank. One is trembled, and what do you have there? It's in sentence number 6.
Trembled in
terror. Yes, yeah, so you and
him cringed in terror.
Okay, so we have three different translations here. Before the king and the queen. The Hamelech and the king, Kambachamoso, gets up in his anger, Mishteh Yayin, from the wine. Party banquet El Ginas Habisan to the garden of the
palace garden.
Okay. So Haman Hamad and Haman
stood up.
Stood up.
Do you all have Hamad stood up?
Remain.
Okay. Now, again, we'll come back to these verbs over here in different translations. Levakeis al nafsho, to request, to beg for his soul, his life, from Esther HaMalkah, Queen Esther, ki ra'ah, because he saw, ki chosah, I love her ra'ah, me'ez ha'melech, that the evil was...
deadly for him.
Backfiring.
No, one says, let's translate the words.
Oh.
Not...
has been determined against him.
And you said what, did you say?
It would end up badly.
Okay, now, Bahamelech and the king, Shav Meginat Abisan, remember he had gone out. So now he comes back in from the palace garden, El Beis Mishteh Yayin, to the party room, Haman Nofel Ala Mitash Esther Aleha, and Haman is...
has fallen.
Okay, I want to come back to that one. It's not even going away now. The bed, the couch that Esther is on, and the king says, Hagam, even also, to conquer the queen, is that what you have, conquer? Or assault, attack the queen? Imi Babayas, with me, inside of the house or palace?
House.
Okay. The words have come out from the king's mouth. And
Haman's face fell.
There's got to be a different translation.
It covers.
Okay. Okay. Now, I just want to... So, fell or they covered? Now, just a little... I just said one word. Just one word I wanted to do, right? So, again, it says, sentence 8, the king comes back from the palace garden to the banquet room, and Haman, in Hebrew, no fail. And in the sentence before, sentence 7, it said, the king gets up in his anger from the banquet to the palace garden, and Haman, in Hebrew, amad. Now, let me just do this on the board for a second. And one word was... was... One word is amad, and the other is no fail. So this, we had two translations, right?
Mm-hmm.
One was stead up, and the other one was remain. That was two different translations. And no fail is fall.
Fallen.
Okay, so when you said fallen, that's why I said I have to say something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Mark is going to explain to us the Hebrew grammar. The difference between amad and no fail.
Amad is the past tense and no fail is the present tense.
Okay, you hear that? One is past tense, the other is present tense. In the Hebrew, I'm not going to teach grammar this time, just one very short thing, and that is, Hebrew is based on three-letter roots, three-letter verbs, and the vowels are placed there to tell you what the person and the tense is that is taking place. So the root of all of these, when you would write the root, you would just write it like this, and without any vowels. Once the vowels come in, then it has the different meaning. So I'm just going to do this for one second. I'm going to say, made is
present.
And na foul is past. I just switched the two of them around, the vowel, and it has an entirely different meaning. Okay, I stand and I stood, and I will stand. They're different meanings, different tenses. So in Hebrew it's done like this. So here we have two sentences right next to each other, talking about something that happened in the past. And one says, Haman Amad, which would mean either stood up or remained, because Omeid is something which is stationary. It's not moving. It doesn't go. In contrast to Ahasuerus, who goes out of the party, he stays there. And no fail is present tense. He's falling on the bed. So that fallen is, besides which Rashi says the following thing. Picture the scene. Esther has just accused Ahasuerus of wanting to kill her and her people.
Him.
Yes, I'm sorry. And Ahasuerus goes out in anger, and he comes back, and what does he find?
Haman's on the couch with the queen.
Haman's on the couch with the queen. Is he crazy? What's he doing over there? So let's just see what it says. It says, Haman nofel alamita. Haman is falling, present tense, on the bed, the couch of Esther's. And the king looks and he says, I'm going to translate it this way. Do you want to kill my queen right here inside of my palace? Is that what you're doing? No. But that's not what the sentence before said. Why did he stay over there? In sentence 7 it says, why was Haman in the room? I mean, obviously, and the king comes back and he sees something else. He sees Haman something, and he says, what do you do? You see what the problem is over here. So that, and there's a change in tense of the verb. So that's why now I'm going to tell you what Rashi says. They've heard what Rashi says before. Rashi quotes the Gemara, which says, Hamalach dechapo. The angel pushed him. The angel pushed him over there. Now, so you say, whoa, what a talking angel over here. So I'm just going to tell you, I'm again saying this, that because they didn't come up with these things just out of the clear blue sky, there's a change in the verb. There's something wrong over here. Haman is saying he wants to beg for his life. And he comes into the room, and the Ahasuerus comes back, and he says, you're attacking the queen. And it's a different tense. So that's why it says over here that he didn't want to do that. That's the last thing in the world he wants. He's going to kill. Does he want to kill Esther? Does he want to seduce Esther? Does he want to do any of that? Of course not. It's just it looks like that to the king because he gets pushed to do that. Okay, and now, forgive me, this is the verbs that you said over here, the difference. One is that his face is fallen, and the other one is his face they covered over.
Yeah.
Okay, so Rashi over there says, as far as covering over the face, Rashi says that that's what they did. That if someone, I was going to say, not correctly, but I was going to say, because, you know, when a person's about to be executed, they cover over his face. You know, whenever the guy is executed, the picture, put the mask over his face, whatever. So, the Malbim says over here, because the Malbim says that what the Persians used to do is that when the king is angry with someone, they cover over his face. Because the king doesn't want to have to look at this guy anymore. I don't want to see you anymore. I don't want to see your face. That type of thing. Or the opposite, which is somebody does something in your face. So this is the opposite. That's why, and the verb here, kafu, is, how would you say it if it was his face was fallen? A person is crestfallen.
Yes.
Yeah, no, in Hebrew, I'm just thinking of the verb. If it would be chafu, it would probably be as chafui, with as an adjective. Okay. So now, vayomer
So really, it should be clear from the Hebrew, and I don't know the grammar, because that's very different. I mean, they covered means that it's going to then be a plural, and the other about the fallen, if that's an adjective.
Okay, so how come that translation has his face is fallen? Because the word in Hebrew for face is a plural noun.
Okay.
In other words,
all right.
I'll give you this example. Did you ever hear of Shana Panim?
Right.
So Shana is nice. Panim is?
Face.
But Panim is the plural form of a noun. The only thing is, there's no such thing as
a pen
or something. There's no such word. In other words, the word is a plural word altogether.
Right.
So it would be appropriate to have a plural verb for the plural noun. So that's the justification why that is that way. Okay. Vayomer Chavron, also Chavronah, who is Echad min Hasarisim, one of the eunuchs, Lifnei HaMelech, before the king, Gam Hinei Ha'eitz Asher Asah Hamon LeMordechai, behold, the tree which Haman made for Mordechai, Shadivre Tava HaMelech, that Mordechai had spoken good for the king, Omeid Vavei Haman, is standing in Haman's house, it's Gavah HaMishim Amos, 50 Amos high, Vayomer Melchelu, Allah, the king says, hang him on it, Vayislu as Haman, they hang Mordechai, Al Ha'ed. Excuse me. Thank you. You're not supposed to know on Purim the difference between.
Well, we do.
You have to drink in order. By Yisrael Haman Al Ha'ed, Hashem Mordechai, they hung Haman on the tree which he had prepared for Mordechai. But Hamas Hamelach, and the king's anger was Shachacha was
cool,
abated.
Okay.
Cooled down.
Now, just to go over with Rashi. A few things over here. We had, coming back to sentence 4, where she says, "Hinim karani v'ami, I and my people have been sold, v'hashmid, the three terms for destruction, v'hashmid, l'arog v'aveid, v'ilu." And again, let's just see the two translations. And if, v'avonim v'shvachot nim karnu, we were sold for slaves and maid servants, hecharashke, I would have been silent. He ain't hatsor shoveh benezek hamelach. Now, Sharon, hold your translation for 1 minute. Let's hear the other translation. Is ain't hatsor shoveh?
He travails.
Is not
equal.
But the adversary is not worthy of the king's damage.
Okay, the adversary is not
worthy of the king's damage.
Okay, and your translation was?
I would have remained silent, but the suffering would then not be equal to the king's loss.
Okay. We know what sorrows are, right?
Mm.
Sorrows?
Troubles.
Sorrows,
yeah.
Sorrows. So here it says, Ein Hatsar.
Oh, the troublemaker.
Oh, so there's troublemaker and there's troubles.
Yeah.
Travail. Those are the two things. Again, what did you say, Cassie, your translation?
Adversary is not worthy of the king's
favor. Okay. So, sar is either describing the person, or it is the troubles which are befalling the people. So, but let's just take it, because the travail is not...
The suffering would then not be equal to the king's loss.
The suffering is not equal to the king's loss. So altogether, what does that mean? That mean?
What is that?
The explanation that the author gives here, we've been sold as slaves, I would have remained silent. You yourself would have realized you lost after a few years. You yourself would have seen that you lost much more than 10,000 loads of silver. You would have refused to exterminate. If you had regrets later, it would be too late.
Okay, so what that is that this, I have to speak up now, and I wouldn't have spoken up because it's going to be too late. It'll all be done if I don't speak up right now. The Rashi says over here, "Einenu chosheish b'chok ha-melech," that he, the adversary, the tsar, the one who gives the sorrow, the adversary, does not concern himself about what will happen to the king. Because if he had only gone after to the benefit of the king, he would have sold them, and he would have, or you, would have gotten money for selling them. Or they could have been your slaves. In other words, he's not concerned about the damage that will happen to the king because of this. Why do you just kill people? They're worth money as slaves. So Ein Hatzar Shoveh B'Nezek HaMelech, he does not take into mind the damage that will happen to the king by these people being destroyed, by being wiped out. So then the king says, Vayomer Melech Ahasuerus, the king says, Vayomer L'Esther HaMalkah, and he says to Queen Esther. So Hachman says twice, king, excuse me, twice he said. So Rashi says an interesting thing, and you're going to say, what's this talking about once again? It says, Rashi says that the Medrash here says that originally he was speaking to her through a messenger. And now that he finds out that she comes from a royal family, he speaks to her directly. Vayomer HaMelech HaChashverosh Vayomer, and he says to Esther. So you can ask, there are other people around here? Are there other people around in this party?
There should be servants around, you know?
We know for sure in the end that there's one guy who's there. That's Carbona is over there. Are there other people here or not? And then it said in sentence number 7, and the king gets up and is angry from the party, and Haman remains to request, to beg for his soul from Queen Esther, because he saw, in the end of sentence number 7, he saw a love for Ames Hamela, that the, what?
King rose in rage from the wine feast and went into the palace garden.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Haman remained to beg Queen Esther for his life.
Now comes he saw
that the king's evil determination against him was final.
So the word kolsa is your translation is was final. What was the other translation that we had?
End up badly for him with the king.
End up badly.
End up badly.
Okay, and.
For he saw that evil had been determined against him by the king.
Determined against him. What word does this all depend on? In Hebrew, it's the word kolsa. Now, kala is to finish off. Kol means everything. So we have, that's what gives rise to these different translations or these different possibilities over here. Rashi says, nigmara hara'a v'hasinav anekama. It is completed. The anger, it's all, he's a goner. It's all over. There's nothing he can do anymore with the king, and therefore he figures he will try to speak to Esther over here. Now, in sentence number 9, Harbona, one of the eunuchs says before the king, Gam hine ha'etz. Gam means?
Also.
Also. So what does it mean, also the gallon? Huh?
This is just a then, Harbona.
Oh, then, it's then?
Yes.
Read me the...
Then Harbona,
one
of the chambers. You'll be the one before that?
No. The then there is in a different place. That's what.
Okay. Then Harbona, one of the chamberlains in attendance of the king, said, furthermore.
Furthermore. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it's furthermore. What do you mean furthermore? What is, you know, it's furthermore means not only that, but something more. So what is the something more?
The 50-cubit high gallows which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good for the king, is standing in Haman's house.
But furthermore, what does furthermore mean?
There's more to come.
In other words, he tried to kill Esther.
Right.
He wants to kill her people. And in addition to that, the guy who saved the king's life
was going to be hanged on.
He's trying to kill him now.
Well, wasn't he the original target?
But does the king know any of that?
No.
In other words, Harbona is saying, Esther, the people, and the guy who saved the king's life, he's trying to get also. Okay, hang him. They do. End of story, according to Rashi. Okay, now...
There's something very interesting about Harbona.
Mm-hmm.
It says, our sages ordained that one should always say, Harbona Zahor Latov.
Right.
Harbona of blessed memory, because it was Harbona's swift advice that prevented Haman from possibly talking or bribing his way back into the king's good graces.
Right. So Harbona speaks up right away, right? In other words, again, according to let me do it this way. That which you just said, that Gam Harbona Zahor Latov, that is taken from the song that is sung at the end of the reading of the Megillah, where it says, Shoshanas Yaakov, Tal of Isamecha. Sound familiar? Shoshanas Yaakov, Tal of Isamecha. Nobody knows what I'm talking about.
That sounds familiar.
Okay, the tune, yeah. So that's because at the end of the Megillah, everybody's ready to go, and they're rolling up the Megillah and putting it away, and they're not listening at that time. So it ends with, the Gam Harbona Zahor Latov. Harbona is also should be remembered for good, because, as you've just said, he says right away what happened, or that the thing is waiting there. And this is the paragraph. Shoshana Yaakov told us, there are a lot of allusions to things here. The rose of Jacob was cheerful and glad. The rose of Yachat Chelas Mordechai, when they jointly saw Mordechai robed in royal blue. Shua Samar Yisrael Netzach, you, God, have been their eternal salvation. The Sikva Sam, Bechol Dor Vodor, and their hope in every generation. Lohodia, to make it known, Shekolko Vecholo Yevosha, all of those who hope in you will not be ashamed. Lo Yikolamula Netzach, and they will not be humiliated. Kolachosim Boch, all who take refuge in you. And then, Ar Haman, cursed is Haman Ashabikesh Labdi, who sought to destroy me. Baruch Mordechai Yehudi, blessed is Mordechai the Jew. Aruro Zeresh, cursed is Zeresh, Ashes Mapidi, the wife of the terrorizer. Brucha Esther Baadi, Esther, who sacrificed for me, is blessed. Vegam Harbona Zahor Latov, and Harbona should also be remembered for good. Who is Harbona? All of a sudden we're throwing him in here. So that's what it says over here. The fact that he, Harbona, is the one who at that moment says, hey, there's a gallows over there he tried to kill him. The king says, right away. So in other words, what has happened over here is that the king, because Haman is at the party, and as we said last week, that Esther invites him to be there so that he will not have time to prepare his defense, and that he will be shocked by the accusation that's being made there, and that the king is not going to call him and say, so what do you have to say about this? But it's all taking place at one time. who was Harvel Noah? We mentioned at the end of last week who Harvel Noah was, and the Malbim again says it this week. Not the name of the person, but how does he know that the gallows are waiting there?
According to my book, he was a co-conspirator of Haman's initially. And a friend.
Okay. That's certainly a way to get the heat off of you, right?
And he decided, and also says that Harvel Noah was an opportunist. And now that he was also afraid that if Haman was on trial, he would reveal Harvel Noah's part in the plot.
Okay.
He pointed out the gallows, let the king hang Haman before he had a chance to talk.
So how does that jive with what Catherine quoted over here, that we think Harvel Noah should be remembered for the good? How does that jive with this? I don't know that it does, so I wouldn't spend a lot of time looking for it. I'm saying that that's something completely different. Last week we said that Harvel Noah was the one who went to call Haman to the party. And he heard the whole discussion about the gallows being over there. Now, what we said, when Haman went back to his house after parading Mordechai through the streets and saying this is what is done for the one that the king wants to honor, that at that point when he comes back home and he tells his family everything that happened to him, the mom says, why is he telling them? Isn't he too embarrassed to say anything? So the mom says that what happened was the family said, so what about, did you ever tell the king about the gallows or anything like that? So he said, no way, that would not be an opportune time to say it. Harvel Noah is waiting in the wings to get him to come to the king's party, the queen's party, Esther's party. So he, Harvel Noah, hears all about this discussion that's going on. So that's why Harvel Noah knows about the tree, because remember, the Haman had done, it was all done at that one night, the whole thing that takes place. He builds the gallows right after the first party. And then he goes to the king to be able to tell him to hang Mordechai. And at that moment, the king says, what should we do? And he goes and parades him. And then he goes home and immediately he gets called to Esther's party. So nobody knows about this. That's why the Bob was saying that Harvel Noah was one of the people who went to call him to the party. Okay.
Or it would be interesting if, I don't know where that idea comes from, that's in your head. But the question then would be, does his statement here, which results in Haman being hung, wipe out or make up for it if he were a part of the plot originally? That's
a
question.
Okay, so in other words, is he given his historical forgiveness for doing this to the extent that we are now going to say he should be blessed? That's why I question whether there you can find a way to justify it.
And this is Arya Kaplan.
Yes.
Who translated it.
Yeah, no, Arya Kaplan is a good man. Okay?
I died early.
Yeah. He was... He was in Albany shortly before I came to Albany. There were people in Albany who still had great respect for him. He wrote many, many things. This, the Me'am Lo'ez translation, this was made from the Ladino. Just as an interesting story, the Me'am Lo'ez was on Chumash, and on the various books of the Bible, and it was written, I believe, in Baghdad. And what it did, it had by Rabbi Yosef Kuli, I believe the name is.
Yaakov Kuli.
Yeah, Yaakov Kuli, and it was a very different style of the Chumash commentary from, let's call it the regular Ashkenaz style. And it, in a sense, hit home to me to be able to understand it when we were in San Diego, there was a Sephardi rabbi from a certain place who came to visit us, and he spoke Shabbos afternoon, and it was like the style of the Me'am Lo'ez. What do I mean by that? It was very, very, very entertaining. It was very long, and it had a whole bunch of different things that he brought in there, because the Me'am Lo'ez, this is my prejudiced picture of I was in Morocco, and in Morocco there was nothing on television. I was staying in, I think, a Hilton hotel, like one of the top hotels. There was a television that was like a 10-inch television or something like that in this fancy, fancy hotel. And there was nothing besides movies that were 30 or 40 years old. They're in black and white. And when it came to the meal, we had a meal there. There's a kosher kitchen in Morocco in this hotel. And we had like 15 courses. You came to the table and there were dishes stacked up like this, silverware all the way out like that. And they kept on serving food and food and food. And then after everything, they had dessert, which was couscous with lamb in a served like in a teepee, huh?
That was dessert.
That was dessert. After the meal was over, then there was that. Yes, it was a very, very long and drawn out meal. It was like, you know, I could imagine what a king's potentate meal was in the Middle East based on that. Then afterwards I realized there's no entertainment. There's nothing to do over there. You just keep on eating all the time. That's the thing. So you have this big, big meal over there. So again, not in the kosher dining room. I didn't get to see you the entire hotel. But it was, that's my picture of this, you know, this extended banquet going on for a long time, lots of food. And by the same token, when it came to the teachings that would take place on Shabbos afternoon, it just filled up the whole time. Not that people other than, you know, going to watch television or Shabbos on Shabbos or something, but I'm just saying that it's not that whole type of style. So there are many midrashim that are found in there, and also many halachas that were brought in and woven into the whole story of what's going on. Okay, now, let me not do the Malbim now. Let me do something else. And if you saw when he sent out the announcement, did you see there was a picture? If you open up the blast, there was a picture in there.
Oh.
So that picture is one of three, I'll call them classical paintings, that were made of Esther's banquet. So although I have, this is small, but we'll pass it around because I want you to see it. There are three pictures, paintings over here, and one is depicted by J. Victor's, another by E. Norman, another by J. Steen. Who are they? Victor's is... Victor's is a Dutch painter who painted mainly biblical subjects, but also portraits, historical scenes, and genre paintings. He was influenced by Rembrandt. The work can be found in the Gemälde Galerie Alte Meister in Kassel, Germany. Norman, another painter, was an English painter, died in 1923, and it's found in the Sunderland Museum, his painting. And then there's J. Steen, and Steen was a Dutch genre painter known for his humor and use of color. Though he focused on painting scenes from everyday life, he also painted historical, mythological, and religious subjects. And this painting is the Museum Bradius in The Hague. Okay? So all three of them are focusing on Esther, Ahasuerus, and Haman, but they differ both in the choice of which secondary characters and objects to include, and in the depiction of the figures' interactions, stances, and expressions. These variations allow for different understanding of both Esther's and Ahasuerus's character and motives. Now, I came across this by accident, really, and that these pictures are over there. And then it has in the descriptions of the different paintings where, in a sense, a different translation, sometimes focused on in the Gemara in a different place, will give these different things. So this, let me show you the paintings. Now, just, I'm going to ask you, try not to touch anything when you pass it around. So this is one.
Which one is this?
This one is the first one, I believe.
Just as an aside, I was looking at my email. I guess Netanyahu presented... Congress, was it? an illustrated Megillah Esther.
Oh.
Very ornately adorned. Mm-hmm.
In the spell.
Yeah. Okay, now you see in this one, there are only three people at the banquet. Mm. And what they point out is that Esther is standing, Ahasuerus is here, he has the scepter in his hand, he shows he's very angry, and Haman is over here clutching his hands like this, you know, in an entreatful look. That was Victor, the person. This is Norman, and if you take a look at this, it is much more dynamic as to what is taking place. They're not by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just wait a second till it passes around so you can see this.
Mm-hmm. Much more dynamic.
Sounds
like they're throwing thunderbolts or something.
Yeah, so now what they highlight is what Esther looks like in this one in comparison with the other one. In this one, Esther is accusing. You can see that she's very dynamically accusing. And
I also wondered, maybe Rembrandt possibly had some Jewish blood. Could it be possible? Because we were in London, there was at the National Portrait Gallery or something. They had a whole exhibition of his works, and he had several Jewish pictures. He was subject.
Right. Because supposedly that Rembrandt had many, many Jewish subjects that he painted, because I think supposedly he lived it like in a Jewish neighborhood. There were many people around. Many portraits were done at the time by patrons who paid to have them done. And there may have been wealthy Jews who wanted to have their... I think there's one famous painting that's just called... One painting that's just called... a Jewish woman or something like that.
I think possibly writing the king.
Yeah, there's something like that. One of the very famous painters. I'll just tell you my Rembrandt story, and that is when Lucy and I were in Amsterdam, we were there over a Shabbos, and I'm not saying that I advise anyone to do this on Shabbos as an activity, but we went Shabbos afternoon and we wanted to see the Rembrandt Museum. And so we went there and we come in, and there's a charge to go there. So we didn't have money to pay. We wouldn't have paid anyway. We also weren't aware whether you could buy tickets before Shabbos and have it reserved or anything like that. Anyway, we came over there, and as soon as I walked in, I was about to explain and say, you know, it's my Sabbath. I can't do anything. I can't pay anything. So as soon as I walked up, the guy looks at me and says, Shabbos, Shabbos. And then he opens the turnstile and has us go around to go in without having to pay. He said, Shabbos. Anyway, when we were there, we met an Israeli family, and we teamed up with them and went touring with them afterwards. Okay, so this is a second picture you see in here. It is, there are a lot of servants in the background over here, and here, Esther is very dynamically pointing the finger at the accuser, and he is sitting there like this, and it describes Ahasuerus as being very passive over here, which then gives rise to the question, you know, what type of guy was he? Now here, this is the third one. This is by Steen, and it has similarities to the second one more so than the first.
Notice that in the second one, she's wearing white, which makes her stand out from everybody
else. Yeah.
A lot of people.
Yeah, so in composition of art and the balancing of colors and the way to get your eyes to focus on things, there are a lot of different things. In other words, if you contrast, you have the white standing out. In the second painting, the garden is in the back, is visible through the center. And again, it's much lighter. You see the trees and everything in that second one. The first one is the Dutch one, which is it's very the style of Rembrandt. It is it's a very call it dark picture altogether. And you see the way they are dressed in that one is very much like people in most times when they painted, they made their paintings, they portrayed biblical figures wearing the clothing of the time. So in the first one, they're wearing like 15th, 16th century clothing of Europe. The second one is more, you know, looking at, so what did they wear at that time? And I had a one-half credit course at Yeshiva University of Art. Did you have Chernowitz? Was he? Okay. So anyway, it was a required course when I went to Yeshiva University. It was, you know, the old style university where in order to be a cultured person, you had to take certain courses, and if you did not take those courses, you could not be considered intelligent. So we had to, so it was a little art college, and we had to take art and music, because otherwise how could you graduate college without having this rudimentary knowledge of something? So, and he would have been very proud that I remember certain things from him.
They were saying that their clothing reflects probably the years in which it was done.
Yes.
With a little décolletage for it.
Okay, so this, and here, this is the king, it says the king gets up in his anger, and you can see the anger over here, and it says, and Haman is fallen, or whatever, that looks like what he's doing over here in this one. Now, the king has not yet gone out, but that would appear what is portrayed over here. And here, there's a whole entourage of people that are the servants and everything like that. As I think that's the way I would imagine.
Well, I don't think that they would be alone. The king needs protection.
Well, somebody has to serve.
Somebody has to serve. Somebody has to clean up. Somebody has to do all the things. So let me just read you a little bit from here. Okay. Contrasting the images, Victor's, which was the first one, is the sparsest of the three, featuring just three protagonists around the banquet table. Esther stands in the back with her body and face positioned towards Ahasuerus, but her hand is stretched towards Haman. The two men sit across from each other, the king adorned in red, and Haman robed in black. The king glares at Haman, raising a staff in one hand and clenching the other into a fist. His anger is clearly visible, but seems controlled. Haman, in turn, looks not at Ahasuerus, but at Esther, his hands clasped together anxiously as he awaits his fate. The first one. Norman, the second one. In contrast to Victor's intimate threesome, Norman depicts his figures at a distance from one another, with a scattering of servants displayed in the back. Esther and Haman are highlighted in the foreground, as the white-robed queen kneels and dramatically points an accusing finger at her enemy. Haman reacts by cowering in his chair with his arms raised as if to protect himself from attack. The king, meanwhile, sits in the shadow and appears to be more of an onlooker than a participant in the unfolding drama. Steen, the third one, he chooses to depict not just the king, queen, and Haman, but an audience of servants and courtiers, filling his painting with at least a dozen figures. Ahasuerus takes center stage, standing with one hand raised to strike and the other one clamped in a tight fist. He seems to teeter slightly backwards from either drunkenness, rage, or both. Directly in front of him, his wine goblet is featured prominently, and one servant on each side of the image carries a pitcher ready to refill it. Two people to pour the wine. Esther sits to the viewer's right, a hand clenched to her bosom, while the extremely distraught Haman looks at the floor, his face a mask of dismay. Now, the analysis of this is the relationship to the biblical text. So the artist's choices reflect certain ambiguities in the biblical text and possible different interpretive stances. In other words, this whole thing goes on to say that they who are portraying it differently, obviously they have their own ideas of what it is. But if we take a look at it, we can see some of these thoughts as being found in the various commentaries. Just remember when we started off, we said, what was Ahasuerus? Ahasuerus was a foolish king, right? Because he listened to an advisor to kill his wife, and then he listens to his wife to kill his advisor. Right, that was the thing. So there is this whole argument in the Gemara whether he was a melech tipesh, a foolish king, or he was a melech chacham, or he was a wise king. To be the ruler of the known world, you cannot be an idiot. Can you just fall into it? He was ruthless, apparently, willing to do things. He moved the whole kingdom the way we described it. He wanted to become the potentate himself and not be the democratic ruler, everything like that. And yet, he doesn't know what's going on. He was being fooled by his advisor to get rid of these people. So those questions are there and may be shown. So it says, number one question, three's companies. While Victor's portrays just Ahasuerus, Esther, and Haman, both Steen and Norman include many bystanders in the scene. Who was present at the banquet according to the biblical text? What does it say in what we studied? Although it is clear that Haman and the king are the only invited guests, it is less clear how many other servants were present. Harvona is the only eunuch mentioned by name, but it's possible that others were around as well. The difference relates to the atmosphere that Esther was trying to create. Did she intentionally plan a private and intimate party which might encourage the king's jealousy of Haman, an obvious third wheel? Or, alternatively, did she purposely want witnesses to the accusation? So they're both there. And a note here, quote, see Rabbi Lazar Hamodai in Bavli Talmud Megillah 15b and Medrash Panim Acherot, which further elaborates on the tactics that Esther used to arouse the king's jealousy. So if you have just one person there, that's done. Now what about Ahasuerus' anger? Steen's Ahasuerus is clearly full of wrath and seems somewhat out of control. Norman's king, number two, seems almost apathetic, watching from afar and only inching forward to see better. Remember, sitting all the way in the corner, not doing anything. Although the verses clearly state that Ahasuerus was filled with fury upon hearing Esther accuse Haman, they do not explain the cause of such a reaction, especially considering that Ahasuerus should have been privy to Haman's plan beforehand. Except, if we take the explanation that the Malbin gave, that he did not know of that plan. Was Ahasuerus simply a drunken and fickle king, given to whimsical rages and loss of self-control, as might be concluded from Steen's image? Or might Ahasuerus actually have been Victor's strong and disciplined king, who for some reason really was unaware of Haman's plans, and thus legitimately angry when he heard them? That was the view of the Malbim that we presented. Or is it possible instead that Esther's news actually did not really shock the king at all? Perhaps her plea simply matched his own personal interests and his anger at Haman was unconnected to her plea. For elaboration on each of these possibilities, it gives you another source to look. Was the king drunk or sober at the time of the party?
The wine banquet.
Well, Steen prominently displays a wine goblet at the center of the table and presents a king who appears slightly tipsy. Neither of the other artists emphasize this element. Was Ahasuerus really a drunkard? On one hand, parties and drink are definitely highlighted throughout the Megillah. And in chapter 1, the king is said to ask, Ketov lev ha-melech v'yayin. His heart was good with wine. Right? That's when he called Vashti at the beginning. On the other hand, Ahasuerus was clearly a powerful king who ruled over a vast empire, a feat not easily performed by a drunken fool. Also, now the last question is, Esther docile or active? Victor and Steen both portray Esther as accusing Haman from a position quite close to the king. Norman's Esther, in contrast, stands on her own at a distance from Ahasuerus. actively pointing at Haman. She appears to have her own inner strength and makes the Esther of the other artist seem docile and weak in comparison. What strength of character did Esther really have? Is she ever proactive, or does she only do as others tell her? Is she a puppet of Mordechai, acting only upon his building, or does she, on her own, plot how to bring about Haman's downfall? See the portrait of Esther for more. Remember, this is in 1 minute, Rabbi Soloveitchik gave a very long discussion about the difference between Esther and Mordechai. The difference between Esther and Mordechai he portrayed as the difference between men and women in attacking a problem. And that is that Mordechai, now, anytime you make a general statement like this, someone's going to say, I'm not like that, or this, and that's all true. This is a general thing. I don't know, right-brained or left-brained. Mordechai sees a problem. The Jews are threatened with destruction. Esther's the queen. Mordechai says, go to the king. In other words, problem, solution, therefore do this. And what does Esther say?
I could die if I do it.
That's not the important part about what Esther says is, yeah, correct. If somebody goes to the king, this and this will happen, and therefore what does she do? She creates a whole elaborate scene of how to bring it about, to get the king jealous, have one party, then the next party, and one of these things, one after another, leading there. So, in other words, the man, again, forgive me everyone for general, the man sees problem, solution, straight, go straight ahead. Esther sees problem, now, what am I going to do to solve this? I have to go around like this in order for it to happen. And that's why Salvation said the holiday of Purim, out of all of the holidays, is a combination between Mordechai and Esther. The book is the book of Esther. In other words, because would Mordechai's method have worked or not? I don't know. But I do know that Esther's method did work. This whole roundabout way, getting the curiosity, doing one thing after another to do this, that's what made it happen. And that's what was necessary at the time.
But also, Mordechai said to her, if you don't do it, maybe this is why you've been put here.
Yes, yes.
And if you don't do it, our salvation will come from someplace else.
Right.
So, you know, step up and do it.
Fine, that's the man's way of doing it. That's all. In other words, that's the way. He says, 1, 2, 3, it all follows. You don't do it, God wants to save the Jewish people. Okay, there's another solution. There's another person who's going to make it happen. Yes, it's there. This, therefore this. It's mathematics. Right. You just go straight.
But she also, before she went to see the king, she asked all the Jews to gather together and pray for her instead.
Okay, so in other words, that's the answer. The question, was she docile or was she active? Was she proactive? She is the one at a certain point who takes over entirely and says, do this, do this, do this, do this. Mordechai had never said any of those things. She did all of those steps because that was part of her plan as how to go about doing it.
Yeah, it's,
maybe she was more privy to palace intrigue than Mordechai.
Very possible, but Mordechai, remember, came from, he had been a member of the Sanhedrin, according to what we said. Mordechai was, they were all upper echelon people, as far as that. So they, but as far as creating the situation to make it come about was her tactic that worked. Okay, anyway, if you want the website, how to get to this, to take a look at it, you want to study the picture more, if you just let me know, and I will send it to you. Okay, so that is chapter 7. And Yitzhak Hashem next week, 8, and then 9 and 10.